This episode is brought to you by Eufy Video Lock. Eufy is a smart lock with 2K cam and doorbell that's a 3-in-1 triple security, so you can have everything in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but it's also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. It's got keyless entry, so no more fumbling for the keys when your hands are full. It also has a rechargeable battery that could last around 4 months, and you'll get low battery notifications before it runs out. Passcode unlocking with a remote control with 2K clear sight to see who's at your front door and control from anywhere through the app. And with enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. No monthly fee, unlike other brands that will charge monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and never have to pay for storage. This is the future. This is everything I love about what's happening with doors. In my opinion, this is an absolute no-brainer. I'm telling you right now, this is an absolute no-brainer. We installed them in the house, and it makes, especially when you have a family, it makes life so easy, so secure, so safe, and once again, so easy. Search Eufy Video Lock. That's E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Thank you, gentlemen and guns coming.
Brand new podcast, everybody, and you know for a fact how excited I am about this podcast. This was the podcast I've wanted to do the whole time I had a podcast. This is the one I wanted to do. And I anticipated it was going to be tough because, you know, I've listened to everything it tells on, I listened to. And he notoriously doesn't really talk about comedy. Doesn't, like, get into the breakdown of it or – but, man, this is fucking good because Tommy Buns came over late because he had to stop by a drive-thru and get something to eat on the way here twice. I'm kidding. I don't know why he was late, but he was late. Attell came out to the front yard. We were smoking a cigarette. He was smoking a cigarette. He smoked throughout the entire podcast. The video's up on YouTube. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'm putting up new content. I'm shooting new content. I'm going to be shooting content on the road and putting it up on YouTube, on Facebook, wherever you guys get your content. I'm going to try to put up 1-minute videos for my Instagram. My Instagram, I'm trying to put up stuff all the time to promote shows. So you can, whatever, you know what, just enjoy it, dude. Free content. That's what I'm about. And I appreciate that you guys always thank me for it because, I enjoy doing it. So I just enjoy doing it. Tour dates, San Francisco this weekend, June 9th and 10th. I'm in San Francisco at Cobb's Comedy Club, Sacramento the 11th. Both those shows are sold out. Kansas City Improv the following week, the 15th, 16th and 17th. Followed by Orlando, 22, 23, 24, and then Skanks Fest in New York City on the 25th. And then I'm sticking around on the 26th, 27th, 28th, flying the 29th to Omaha, where I'm doing a call-in sick to work show, Omaha. Todd and Tyler, I'll be hitting up Todd and Tyler early in the morning, drinking hard, and then going to the club and doing a show at noon. It's going to be a blast. I'm going to see if we can get Larry the Cable Guy to come out with me. The next day I have Oklahoma at the Calusa Casino, Cherokee Casino, West Sycamore. I can't read, Leanne. I'm having a hard time reading. Will you go sit by the other mic, please? Columbus Funny Bone the following week, Pittsburgh, Cleveland at Hilarities at the end of July, Tampa. I'm in Tampa. I'm just in Tampa, so you'll hear me on Cowhead Show. I'm in Tampa, just hanging out first week of August. Houston, Brea, Phoenix. Australia. I'm hitting Singapore on the 9th, Perth on the 11th, Sydney on the 13th, Melbourne on the 14th, Sydney again on the 16th, and then Brisbane on the 18th. Listen, Australian podcast listeners, I have never been to Australia. I am begging you, just spread the word. Introduce your friends to the podcast. Introduce your friends to the Machine video. Share the Machine video with them and say, hey, the Machine's coming to Australia. Oh, I just ripped that fart. Did you hear that, Leanne? And so that's that. Then D.C. the following week, Tacoma, Edmonton, Chicago. I'm missing a date. Oh, you know what it is? It's not I'm missing a date. I'm just not to... Wait, did I miss August? Oh, yeah. Denver, Both shows Sunday on the 27th of August have sold out, so we are adding a Monday show. Comedy Works, that's where Dave Attell recorded Skanks for the Memories, and we talk about that. We talk about a lot on this podcast. You know what I'm going to talk about. My favorite thing that has been brought to me by this podcast, Blue Apron. I love Blue Apron. We made a Blue Apron last night, meatball subs. My daughters have never had a meatball sub in their life. My wife has never had a meatball sub in her life. And she made four of the most amazing meatball subs that I had ever had. And it was so simple, so quick. Every meal you get is going to be under $10. The food is sustainable. That's what I love about Blue Apron. By the way, we were in Hawaii. We went to do this dolphin encounter. And the woman talked about the seafood in sourced in sustainably standards developed in the partnership of the Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch. I brought it up to her, and she started laughing. She said, "How do you know about that?" I said, "Oh, it's because we eat Blue Apron. The beef, chicken, and pork come from responsibly farm-raised animals. Produce is sourced from farms of practice regenerative farming. Blue Apron is fantastic. They say the family cooks together and eats together, stays strong together, and that is the truth. Cooking together for our family has been unifying entirely. We get together every night. We have dinner. We enjoy conversation. The girls try new things every week. I mean, we're eating, what, 3 Blue Aprons a week?
Two a week? It's two meals a week, and they're just really good. I've said this so many times. I feel like a broken record, but
I do too. And I know people know that we love this mm-hmm. product. And this, we're not bullshitting. I'm being dead serious. I fucking love Blue Apron. The food is fantastic. And Leanne's kept all the recipes they've given us, so we could go out and recreate the recipes. The problem is, it's not going to stay as cheap as what Blue Apron sends you. They send you farm fresh food. Everything's under $10 per person. It's
locally sourced. You know, I hate the nights I don't have a Blue Apron. I don't have one tonight because our shipment hasn't come yet, and I am at a loss. I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to have to figure it out. With Blue Apron, you don't have to. You just open the fridge, pull out the ingredients on the card, and cook a delicious meal, and it's so brain-free, which is what I love.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And they're flexible. If you don't like certain things, you can make the menus according to you. And this is, I mean, like, it's not a shock that they're this good. They are literally the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to bring people together through cooking. And they've achieved it with our family. I can't wait. The upcoming things coming that are coming up, the featured meals.
What?
This is going to be a Chrysler. This is going to be the real tester.
What is it?
Warm smoked trout and asparagus salad with fingerling tomatoes, potatoes, and garlic croutons.
Ooh la la.
You think Ida's going to eat trout?
I think she'll try it. You know why?
Why?
Because every single meal she says, "Is this a Blue Apron?" And if I say yes, she tries it. If I say no, she wrinkles her nose and is really resistant. So if it's from Blue Apron, I bet you she'd try it.
How about this? Spiced zucchini enchiladas with creamy lime and tomato rice.
Bring it.
Yeah. Elote-styled vegetable tostados with summer squash, poblano peppers, and cilantro rice. You know what's ridiculous about these is that I wouldn't know how to begin making this. I won't even know about peach honey glazed chicken with mashed sweet potatoes, collard greens, and Thai basil.
Yum. And you know what's so funny? I didn't know you could season rice. I know that sounds really stupid,
yeah.
But I had like
lime seasoned rice.
Lime seasoned. It was so.
It was fantastic.
Good.
And by the way,
you could do that.
Because of that, I've started, because I stay away from rice, I always just get mashed cauliflower or riced cauliflower. And now I'm seasoning cauliflower because they taught us how to season rice. We love Blue Apron. And I want you to enjoy it. I really do. I want you to enjoy this as much as we enjoy it. It is affordable. All you got to do is check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals for free with free shipping. That's right. I want you to have three free meals with free shipping. Just go to blueapron.com/BertCast. That's BERTCAST. Go to blueapron.com/BertCast to get your first 3 free meals with free shipping. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't fucking wait. Don't wait. Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com/birdcast. Blue Apron. A better way to cook, a better way to live.
Better way to eat.
A better way to eat. A better way to spend time with your family. So find me on tour, everybody. Let's start this, motherfucker. We got a, I got a bunch of good podcasts. I've got a bunch of live podcasts. My SiriusXM show, I will be airing that. That is a live podcast I did with Nate Bargatze and Sean Patton. I did another one with Mark Normand. I did one at the, I've done a bunch of live ones now. And so I just got to, I think I'm going to have a live week. And I'm also thinking about podcasting every single day while I'm in Singapore, Perth, posting a podcast every single day to kind of keep up with you. I got a lot of big plans. I'm not screwing around. I'm taking things to the next level for the B-man. All right. You guys ready to start the podcast? If you don't know who this person that I'm about to introduce is, I implore you to go get Skanks for the Memories. It is the best comedy album I've ever heard in my entire life. It has defined the way I started doing stand-up. It is the way I would solve stand-up when I didn't know how to do stand-up. I'd go, "What?" I tell him this. I go, "What would a tell do?" He's a guy that he defined our inner dialogue within our family, like our shorthand that we have with each other, me and my wife. We love this album together. I've worked with him one time. I worked with him right when Georgia was born, and we induced labor, so I didn't miss this date with this guy. That's how much I love this guy. He is my favorite comic to watch live. I watched him in Vegas, and I've never laughed so fucking hard. I really hadn't. Him and Bill Burr, the two guys that got me, sucker punched me into laughing. And the guy that's with us is my buddy, Tommy Segura. He's on tour. I'm sure he's doing theaters. Go to TomSegura.com. Check out his podcast, Your Mom's House. His wife's funnier than he is. That's why I think it's a cheat. If my wife was at all funny, I would be so much bigger than I am. But she is a snooze. So that's the podcast today, guys. I really hope you enjoy it. Hit me up on Twitter. Let me know. And find all my social media stuff. And catch me on the road. Today's podcast, it is with great pleasure and an honor I present to you, Dave Attell and Tom Segura.
This is Birdcast.
I was hesitant. I didn't even want to really buy a house, to be honest with you. We lived in a great apartment.
Oh, wait, kids, they need space.
Yeah, hello. Make sure mine's on. Are you talking yours, Dave?
Check two.
Yeah,
check.
You're fine. Yep, perfect.
Two up.
We had a really great apartment.
Checking. We're over that
in
part.
Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 20-foot ceilings, just like a big loft, and what was free. My wife was the office manager, but she wanted to buy a house, and I didn't want to live in the Valley. We were like real close to the Improv. It was just,
yeah,
everything was perfect.
No, I like it because you can't really have apartment. Living in an apartment is good, but you could never have your own chicken coop.
No.
Maybe on the roof, but that would be pigeons.
I think we got those because of Rogan. Because we went out to Rogan's house one day, and he has like, I think he has like 12 chickens.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And
but he has all those dogs, too.
Yeah. Big dogs.
That's a lot of temptation.
Did you ever do the podcast when you went out to his house?
Yeah, I love his house.
Yeah, it's great, right?
It's beautiful.
Where do you live?
I live in New York.
Do you live in Queens, though, or in the city?
No, I'm from Queens.
You're from Queens, but
I live in Manhattan.
In Manhattan?
Yeah. And, you know, the cool thing about, like, you know, I'm an old guy, so I come out here, and all my friends who've made it, their house is like incredible.
Yeah.
And for the amount of money, you can get like a okay apartment in Manhattan, you can get like a huge house out here. So, you know, it's just not right.
Yeah. I always wonder, like Big J was saying, he went to Amy Schumer's house, and he's
beautiful house. I've been there.
Oh, is it the one where it turns from inside to outside almost?
Yes. It's like it's a penthouse, and you can't do any better than penthouse.
Who's in the group of you when you started? Who was in your class?
Whoa, was that the ease in getting to know me part?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Well, no, I immediately thought Big J and Amy are roughly the same class.
Oh, me? No, like, let's see, I've been doing comedy since 88, something like that, since I was like 22. And I'm 52, so 30 years. I guess the class of comics would be like Mark Maron and, you know, Louis, Nick DiPaolo, all those guys. Those were the guys that, like, you know, we would all be doing, like, city spots at the Cellar. But Kevin Brennan really is, like, the guy that I started out with. So, yeah. And Kevin is, probably one of the best unknown comics out there. That's what I think.
He was the first person my uncle had gone to high school with him.
Oh.
And so when I moved to New York, my uncle was like, find Kevin Brennan.
Really?
And he's like, he'll show you the ropes. And so, yeah.
I guess your uncle didn't know Kevin, but that was.
And so I ran into him at the Cellar one night. I went to the Cellar to watch stand up, and he was there. And he made fun of me on stage. And then the first night I talked to him, I went up to him. I was like, it was the night Catch a Rising Star was.
Closing. Oh, that was sad. That was a great place.
I only went there for that one party.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's a good time to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, Kevin and I, we, you know, the open mics in New York and coming up through the club system. And then, how long did you live in New York?
I want to say, like, 3 years, maybe.
3 years. It usually takes about four. I'd say four or four and a half, depending on who you are. But yeah, no. So you know how it is there. I mean, like, you know, it's kind of a there definitely are a lot more comics than when I started. I hate to be the old guy, but this would be a better story if I was holding a chicken. Am I right, Rooster? Yes. But out here, it blows me away how many comics there are. There must be like 10,000 comics.
There's
here,
a ridiculous
right?
amount of comics. Can I tell you the things that I think have changed really drastically?
Do you think 10,000? I think maybe more. I'd say like,
I think
County San Diego and Sacramento, maybe 100,000 comics.
I wouldn't be shocked. When I started doing stand up, I felt like there was 30 comedians.
Yeah,
and there were different groups. There were the guys that did the Cellar,
right?
The guys that did. That did the Boston. It's kind of the same group a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jay Moore also was definitely, I'm sorry, I forgot. But Jay also was like, you know, in the beginning days, like when you talk about Boston Comedy Club, you know, those guys. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Dave and Jay and Dave Chappelle, that whole
thing. Yeah, absolutely. Dave just coming up. And Jay, who I also shared an office with at SNL, a really good buddy of mine. You know, that's the thing is like, you know, a lot of these guys were super talented. And, you know, we got a lot of stage time. And that was the whole thing of, like, I started before the comedy boom of today, you know, like, way before that. And I was kind of on the 80s bottom, you know, end of comedy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, like, you would see all these guys go up there. And I say this on pretty much every podcast is that there's a lot of guys who would just go up there and kind of almost, like, autopilot a set. And it was always, like, you know, the sweater comic guy or, like, you know, the guy who would do the guitar, those kind of people. And, like, you know, I said to myself, because I was working the door at the Improv with Kevin Brennan, and you know, I was like, if I ever get this kind of stage time, I'm never gonna, like, just do it like that. You know, I'm gonna, like, you know, try and do something new at least every time. And, like, it really bothered me when I would see these guys, they get up, it was like almost like a kabuki dance theater thing. You know, they just get up there and, like, turn off. You know, they're like half in the bag anyhow. So you know, and now I think there's like tons of comedy, you know, like just every type, every kind of flavor in the rainbow. You
it's
know?
Changed. I think podcasting changed it a lot.
I agree with that.
I think there's a lot of guys that do it.
A reason to do it.
I don't think they do it for like comedy. I think they do.
Right.
They don't do it to do another special. They do it to get like into movies or which is completely fine. I'm not judging why, but
it's always weird to see who does. Who like that's all I do. I'm a comic. Like I'm pretty. I'd say I'm pretty good to good in terms of like after all this time. Like I know what I'm doing, and you know I wouldn't say I'm a great comic, but I would say that there are great comics out there. But definitely you need that other thing, whether it's a movie or a TV show, to actually connect with an audience outside of the podcasting. Which you know I know you have a super cool following, so you know that's I guess that's part of it now, where you got to connect with them outside of the club. You know, outside of the stage.
I think that podcasting has also changed the dialogue with comedy. But one of the things that blew me away when I was because starting in New York, everyone bombed.
Yeah, like, that's true.
And then when I came out here, no one bombed.
Really?
Yeah. I remember going to the Laugh Factory and being like watching Dane and going, so he never bombs? Like he just always murders? Because the guys I liked always, it was a roll of the dice.
Right. No, Dane always killed, like in New York too, when I would see him, he always killed. And super huge, like definitely like the guys who like were crushing it on the college circuit, because there used to be this college circuit, which I guess there is now, but I can only imagine what they let you talk about and don't talk about. And, you know, it's got to be like
internet kids do college circuits now.
Okay. But back then that was like, you know, hey, man, you can make some big money doing colleges. You know, that was great. But, you know, these guys who, like, I guess could really crush it at college, they had that performance down, you know. So, like, a lot of energy, a lot of connection to this audience, you know. And that was, like, a super cool skill when you saw it, you know, in different venues, because you're, like, sometimes, like, in a club. Like, why is this guy jumping around? You realize, like, he's used to performing in a basketball court, you know, somewhere in a, like, community college. And there was definitely a couple of guys like that. Another guy who, you know, I always am drawn to the joke writers because I like to, you know, I love the jokes.
I've heard you say that. You said that in the green room the other day. You're like, I don't like storytellers. I like joke writers.
Yeah, no, and like I'm not a good storyteller, and I'm definitely like, you know, I'm an old hack, but I love a joke, and I love like that. They're, even though jokes are kind of like out right now, it's all about like passion and truth, and you know all this political stuff. It's like the joke in my mind always like I just love it. I just love a new joke. I like a dirty. I like a clean. And there's like you know, it's almost like a dying art form, this joke writing thing. You know, it's like it's like, I don't know what the audience, you know, they're like great listeners, but, you know, I would love to see them like, you know, like kind of kick it up for the jokes, you know?
Yeah, it's...
what do you think about that?
I was talking to Stanhope about it.
Can we talk about Doug for like 2 minutes? Because we talk about him outside.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about like real comics, like Doug is probably, I think of him as like, you know, the last of the Mohegan. Like he's the real comic, you know? He has no... He never pulls back. He totally he does it the way it should be done, which is just like he fucking lays it all out there. And you know, I always look to him as like whenever I think I'm doing something hacky, I'll call him and I go like, "Do you think this is hack? You know, what do you think?" Because he really, I think, is like my rudder. You know,
yeah.
But I'm so like on the other side. I mean, like I'm like totally 8 p.m. TV land compared to Doug now. I mean, like he really is.
He's really. My wife has said this, and I mean, I think the reason Doug and I are friends is sometimes when I'm, because you know, you don't get a lot of friendships out on the road. You just tour.
Looks like someone needs a hug.
Yeah, I know. I did this weekend. I could have used a hug in a car ride yesterday.
But a lot of. Well, that's the cool thing. Like we did the Crapshoot Comedy Festival, and like tip of the hat to the people, Paul, and all those guys who put that together. Because like a festival in Vegas, it's like, you know, that's a difficult thing. I mean, there's so many other distractions and things to do, and like to do a comedy festival there, I think is a great idea. So
how
I was
you, How did you meet Doug? I'm sorry.
How did I meet him?
Yeah.
Oh, I met him in Montreal. Like I met him in Montreal. Like 100 years ago, and that was when Montreal was really...
Segura's calling. I think he's out front.
Oh, cool.
Hey, you out front?
We can bring him in as a special guest.
Just come around the side. Open the side gate. You can reach over and...
Hang a left at the chicken coop. You're going to see the treehouse. Keep going. Then there's a lemon tree. Pick a lemon and make a wish.
I wanted Tom to be here because he is the...
I've worked with Tom a bunch of times. He's super strong. He's
the last like real... comic. I don't think he's ever been on TV.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow.
All he does is tell jokes and do specials.
Wow.
And I, when we were talking about...
Well, don't you consider doing a special being on TV?
No, because they've never been on TV. They're on Netflix.
Oh, really? But hey, Tom.
Buns.
Hey, well, he was just giving you the ultimate praise and yet also belittling your work.
Yeah.
I think Netflix is TV, don't you?
Yeah, it's TV now.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Are you going to do the standing or?
Oh. Am I going to what?
I thought you would stand.
I was standing over you, yeah.
All right. We're talking about Stanhope.
You know what we're going to call this podcast? Three Beards. Three
you know
Beards.
We grew beards because of you.
What's that?
We grew beards because of you.
Cool. Well, at least blink when you say it. Are you going to bring an intensity that kind of kills all fun in the room? Because I love that new podcast. Let's get to the heart of it.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Thank you. Three Confederate generals sitting. Well, go ahead, Longstreet. What do you think?
Dave told a joke this weekend that I've been telling everybody.
Tell it on stage.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, go ahead. Make sure I can't tell it again.
Do you know how much I used to...
Fan it up to the point where we see it in 2 and a Half Men, if it comes back. Go ahead.
But I told it to Stanhope. I told it to my wife. And Leanne's the one that, like, if you can get Leanne to laugh, she doesn't listen. Yeah. And she started howling laughing. It was your joke about owls.
Yeah, okay, that's enough said.
That's enough.
Hey, you know what the thing is? This is what I was thinking. Now, you have, how many kids do you have?
Two.
Tom, how many do you have? One kid, okay. Now, if I did a show where, like, the sons and daughters of comics, you know, like, they live in a house, like, kind of like a reality show.
Yeah.
I'm not in the house, so relax.
Yeah.
But they're all, they're like the sons and daughters, because, you know, everybody talks about their kids now in the act, so we'll have, like, therapists in there to, like, deal with yeah. all the damage you're doing them to them. But they, it's all the kids, like, you know, like, Ben Stiller's kids, all these, like, the daughters and sons of comedy, you know, even like, you know, the legendary, like,
Rain Pryor
and George Carlin's daughter, they're all in there. Now, then we have a big show at the end of the season, but your kids get bumped by the more famous kids. Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
It's like, ah, oh, damn it. But your kids also have to go on little kid road gigs to pay for their little kid problems.
Al Madrigal was like, because I'm having panic about my kids growing up, and he goes, oh, we need to do a tour where we get into Winnebago's and we take our kids on the road.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I really do.
I like your Army Ranger boots.
Thank you. Well, I'm actually here to fumigate the yard, so you've got a serious septic tank leak.
I was hoping Dave would show up in shorts.
I'm not into that.
You don't have...
There's something about a grown man wearing shorts during the day. I mean, maybe like once a year you're allowed to do it on vacation, but I wasn't raised that way.
Yeah.
I know out here it's almost like if you're wearing pants, you know, you're not from this country.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, this is a sanctuary city, correct or not? But let's talk about it. Guys, here we are. How come you weren't at the Crapshoot Comedy Fest?
I didn't get invited.
You didn't?
No.
I thought maybe you were at the Whip It Out Wisconsin Throwdown.
I would have gotten either, yeah. Was it fun?
It was really fun. Watching Dave might have been the hardest all of us comics laughed. I mean,
I say one thing about Brad Williams? He is really, I love working with him. And like, if I was a bigger comic and I could bring like, you know, headliners on tour with me, I would definitely bring him out with me because
really?
We have a good time.
That's
and like,
cool.
You know, that's the fun of it. But I don't do theaters. Do you guys do any theater work?
Theaters.
I do.
Some. No.
How do you like it?
It's totally different, man. I mean, I like it. I like it when they're all there. If they're all there to see you, you're just like enjoying the adulation of it. It's still fun, but I did go back and forth. I just did like 4 months of heavy, heavy touring. And
I would
book clubs in between theater gigs. It was a totally different experience.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I liked it though.
And you know,
You've done a lot of theaters before.
No, I was never a really good theater act. That's the problem.
I think it's because you're just like Mr. You know, club act. Like because you thrive in.
Well, I do wear the jacket that says Mr. Club Act, so it would look stupid in a theater.
You are the quintessential club comic, though.
I don't know about that. I'd say Bobby Slayton or there's a couple of guys who like really are like, you know, hardcore. You know, like just full tilt. You know. Edge comedy club acts, and those are the guys that like when you talk about like you know because I'm like so much older than you guys, but the those are the guys that like you know you have to like you know work with and deal with and like have to follow those guys. It was intimidating, you know.
Well, were you especially
intimidated by them? I think it was like a lot different than like. You know, you guys can do a lot more recon, like with the web and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you see them for the first time, like you've never met them.
Yeah.
And then you see them like just like destroy a room and you're like, uh-oh, I got to go on after that guy or, you know, whatever I have to do there. It's like Richard Jenny, I think, was a name that doesn't get enough attention. And I've said this before is that he was a theater act. He was a power act. And like even though a lot of his stuff, I guess you could say would be you know, today would be kind of like quaint or charming. It still was really well written. And like nobody could like do a chunk of material like for like 15 minutes on like, you know, whatever.
One topic too.
Just like, like every angle. And I watched him because I was like a writer on the Caroline's Comedy Hour. So I would watch him do stuff and like we'd talk, you know. And like he really kind of taught me like just about like, you know, don't leave jokes on the table. Try and get as much out of a bit as you can, you know, especially, you know, back then where it's like, you know, laughs were key. Now I think that you can, you know, kind of like storytell your way out of it or, you know, whatever, you know, blink or pause or sigh, whatever those things are considered now as jokes.
I worked with Richard Jenny, right days after 9/11.
Yeah.
And he...
Oh, you got that gig?
Yeah. And he had all these jokes, and then, like, all about 9/11, and then I ran into him, like, 2 years later, and I was quoting some of those jokes that I... You know, one of the ones that stick in your head? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, I totally forgot about those. I should bring those back. They weren't half bad. I was like, that would be in my act forever.
Yeah, of course.
These guys were before the web and also before, like Netflix is awesome because now people don't... They can kind of discover a guy,
yeah.
You know, or a lady, like, you know, when they feel like doing it. And, like, back then it was like, you know, you either saw it on A&E or whatever and you didn't see it, or you, you know, it was a lot harder to, I think, build momentum as a just a comic, you know.
I didn't know that you could do – when I started in New York, I didn't know that there was the idea of doing the road. I didn't know that you –
That's
I didn't
a good
know guys
point.
Like you would do the road.
I really didn't headline until like 7 years in. I was like, I consider myself like an open mic comic for like 5 years. You
Did
know?
You really?
Yeah, because like even though I was doing like Cellar spots and like Catch a Rising Star, all those different places, Stand Up New York, I still like was doing like whenever I could get stage time, you know. And that's when I really felt like you know, I was in this like 4 or 5 set a night. Mode of every night of 4 or 5 sets, and then on the weekend like 6 or 7, you know, paid spots. So I considered I was doing more free shows than I was doing paid shows. But then after I finally got like a credit or two, and I got out on the road, and to be honest, like I sucked as a headliner for sure, and I also didn't really like know what I was doing. So it was like kind of a, you know,
when do you feel like you knew what you were doing up there?
About 2 weeks ago. Right before the Crapshoot Comedy Festival.
Is that the stuff you're working
on stage with Brad at the Crapshoot?
Is that what the stuff you're working on for your new hour?
I was hoping we could all talk about this because I'm definitely due another hour of something, but I've been like working on like all this other bullshit that, like, you know, I just throw money at it, and like you know, like I'm looking at your house and I'm jealous. I'm like, I wish I had a tree house and a chicken coop, but I spent like $70,000 on some weird web thing that I probably will never be seen. But I would say that like in 2018 I'd like to do an hour. A new hour for Netflix or something like that. But you guys tell me, like, compared to 2 years ago, do you have people coming up to you going, like, I saw that hour, or like...
Oh, right oh, now, yeah. Hours. Tom's probably the brand for that, because I think all of his fans discovered him on Netflix.
See, that's great.
A lot, yeah.
That's great.
And then through that, discovered him on his podcast. And I think Rogan's outreach, I think his podcast has been really big.
He's really, like, his reach is so wide that we get, like, you know, whatever, trickle-down effect from
Joe.
Being,
yeah,
from
well, Joe is unique all the way around, both yeah. on and off stage. And, like, you know, what he does on his podcast is pretty intense and amazing. And the way he does connect, because when I meet somebody who says, hey, I heard you on Joe's podcast, it's like, I know that person is a comedy fan.
Yeah.
They know a lot about comedy.
That's
you know?
Right. Yeah,
so,
they do.
There you go.
Did I remember, you know, you were my first feature week ever.
At Brea.
Yeah.
There you go. Brea Improv. The Proving Grounds, as they call it.
The Tough Love. I did a second week with him like a year later.
Yeah.
And I did one joke from the year before, and he goes, what, do you want to be an actor or something? And I was like, what? And he goes, it's been a year. You can't write 20 new minutes? I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that was but after was, a lot of drunken babbling at
yeah,
me.
But I mean,
I like how you half told the story like a chick. But no, I know now you slam Brea hardcore. In fact, you get top bids at the Stone Ice Cream Parlor across the street. That's the saddest part of that club, when you're like, I didn't sell out, but I look across the street and there's a line around the block for ice cream. Because comedy will never beat ice cream.
Do you remember working with me in Miami?
Years ago.
My daughter had just been born. I just on Last Comic Standing.
Coconut Grove, right?
Coconut Grove.
Yeah.
And you were sick, and the whole weekend you were like, I know. Well, we'll definitely have a drink. We'll definitely... party one night, but I promise. And then Sunday night, you're like, all right, here we go.
It was nuts.
Yeah, and it was insane. But that very first show, my biggest goal was like, you're the first comic that I watched where I understood. I was like, oh, wait.
What not to do.
No,
say
no.
it. Say
we used
it.
To go, me and Dimitri Martin used to go down at 11:35. You always did the 11:35 or 11:10 spot
sure.
at the Cellar. And we'd go watch you every single night. And, and then that I worked with you, and I was like, I just want Attell to be like, hey, great set, man.
Yeah,
and so I go up I do my. Do we? I think you did two shows on Thursday, and two shows on Friday.
Wow, that was a long time ago. I can luckily if I can do one show on Thursday now.
And I did the same act Thursday, both shows, and I did really well. And then Friday early show, I do it again, and I get off stage. You're like, oh, are you gonna write a joke? Holy shit! And you're like, I get it. You can kill. How about telling some jokes?
You sure said that. Here's the point of it. Here's the point of it. When you're middling, you don't have to close the show, so why not experiment? But evidently, you guys don't feel that way. But that's okay. To be upset years later for being a coward is great. Now, I think even Dimitri would have turned the page, literally, since he draws, and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to try a different etching here, maybe a shade or hue.
I took that.
I love
so
the podcast because it's all remembrances, like we were in a war, but we weren't. We weren't.
You might be talking to literally your two biggest fans in comedy.
It's uncomfortable.
Hold on, that chicken is saying something to me. No, well, thanks, guys.
Are you comfortable with that? With, like,
with the chickens? It's like we're in the Virgin Islands or something. I like it, like we're money launderers
or
something.
You're aware of it, right? I feel like you kind of put it up a little bit.
No, I really do think that, like, I'm a utility guy, utility player in the comedy world. I don't really believe that I I consider us all in the same, like, we're all in the same boat,
but
basically.
You know how much, like you're...
And written on the boat is a mortgage. No, I feel that, like, there's the better and the great comics, and that they, you know, it's like respect works both ways, up and down. But, like, I am more connected to you guys, especially since now that you're, like, you're on the road, you got a following, you know, the good and bad of, like, of doing these gigs on the road, you know, of course, we can talk about for hours. But the beauty of it is that, like, you know, you have the freedom to, like, work on a new hour and all these different things. And, you know, every time I always think of, like, you know, I can't believe I'm still on the road and all that kind of stuff. I think of, like, my friends who are on, like, a dumb sitcom or, like, you know, like, they're, you know, waiting to hear on a movie. And I'm like, I wouldn't want to live that life. That's not my life. Any movie thing I've ever done, outside of Amy's and, like, one or two other things, I was like, you know, this is, like, 12 hours sitting around to say three lines. It's like, you know, dude, it's not my thing. You know?
I think I probably would have liked, I think they don't do them anymore, but I would have liked four camera sitcoms because it has a live feel.
Four camera.
Was that
so you would see the audience also?
Yeah. But now I just want to do stand up. Like, I don't want to do television anymore. I just want to do my podcast on the road.
Well, now that's how show business works. That means someone's going to make you. Going to want you to do TV because that's always how it works, you know. But I would say at this point for me, like, if I can get a new hour and I can keep banging out new jokes, then I'm pretty happy with my, you know, place in the world of comedy and my audience, the core audience. Even though they found me through a TV show, the Insomniac Show, and I wouldn't say that, like, you know, like, I don't know. People ask me more about that than, like, my hours and, you know, jokes and stuff like that. But there are enough hardcore fans of just comedy that, like, it does make you feel like, hey, you know what? It's cool. Like, people do dig comedy. And I'm sure you get that, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know? From the podcast, too, like, the fans, like, even of this show are comedy fans. You know?
Oh, yeah. They get – like, they'll tap out on podcasts that don't have comics – like that they respect.
Because you tried this with scientists at one point.
Tried it with a lot of different things that it's not worked.
Like, I did that tour. This is another thing that people now are, like, coming up to me, and I don't get how they even saw the tour. But the one I did with Mitch Hedberg and Lewis Black, which was, like, when you talk about a theater tour, that was a cool tour. Because first of all,
poster's still up at Cobb's or something.
Yeah, because Mitch, who you know, like, you talk about great comics and also, like, icons. I think he has influenced a whole generation of comedy.
Oh.
Beyond, like, especially in L.A. and, like, more of the alt world, even though he was not an alt comic, you could see this heavy influence of what he did.
Yeah.
And, like, Geraldo, who's another guy, and actually, you know, Geraldo and Gaffigan, these were guys who were, like, probably a class younger than me, but they also were powerful acts. So you see how, like, those guys, you know, like, even though Geraldo, who I think would be... unstoppable if he had been here, and
he would
have Hedberg
been nuts right now,
yeah, like he really would have been, especially with the topical stuff.
Oh my god,
super smart.
Yeah,
he could do the political stuff. He could do a dick joke. He could do everything. That he really would be like a household name, you know. Yeah. But
did you ever have a night where you, Geraldo, and Hedberg were all partying together?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
See that like I'm
Kurt, special guest Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, it's one of my things. Like I always hammer Doug for like, you know, like what was it like? You know, like because Lynn was out at Bisbee with us this weekend.
Yeah, Lynn.
And I was like, what was it like being around Mitch? Was it? And he was like, he was just a comic. He was like,
right.
There's a real flippancy to like for me to be sitting in a room with you, Mitch, and Greg, I'd be like fucking floored. But I'm sure it's just comics the same way that we would talk like this. There was no real...
Well, the cool thing about now, like, especially with these festivals and stuff like that, where you get to, like, hang with other comics except being on the road alone and all that kind of stuff, is that, like, you know, we do, it's probably not the same in music because that's super competitive, and it's definitely not the same in acting, but, like, we do, like to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we really do... You know, because we're all damaged, broken toys, whatever you want to call it. But we do kind of work best when we're with each other. So
yeah. That
is the fun of it. And back in the day, if you'll say it, I mean, like, you know, Hedberg was one of the first guys who said, you know, I'm going to go and do theater tours. I'm just going to set them up on my own. And I was thinking of, like, who else does that, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember in Atlanta where, you know, I had to do a spot for that Insomniac show because I was started doing – and I went on in front of his audience, and I realized I was like, wow, this is Mitch's audience. Like, they all had a look. They all definitely didn't know what I was saying. They were into Mitch world.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's the first time I ever saw, like, an audience for one person, you know? And I was like, that's really cool that he did that all – just through Comedy Central, through, you know, just being great, you know? And nowadays, like, when we talk about YouTube sensations, there's, like, a ton of these guys where, like, you'll hear it. Like, you'll be there at a club a week later, and you'll be like, who is here? Well, this guy dresses up as a dinosaur, and he, you know, he comes out, and he, you know, does a birthday wish, and, you know, you're like, how'd it go? It's like, I don't know, $80 a ticket. He sold out.
They told me, I did a club where... they said, oh, do you know so-and-so? I said, who the fuck is that? And they're like, it's these two guys, and they play video games on stage.
Are they black?
They didn't mention that. But they said that, like, they're like, it was, like, all 16-year-old boys in here.
Really?
And packed. And they're just screaming, like, they would pick teams. Like, you're on Bert team, and then they would go crazy. And they would just talk as they're playing, like, oh, fuck him on this. And then...
Oh, that's the really big thing right now. It's called Twitcher. And these kids go on and play video games and get paid to play video games.
Yeah.
Because people watch them because they talk as they play video games.
Wow. Yeah, no, comedy really is almost kind of like a Renaissance fair skill compared to some of this new stuff that you can do, you know?
Yeah.
Really, yeah. It's almost like you're, you know... Like a blacksmith.
Well, I say to people now, they're like, what advice do you have to a young comic? I go, are you interested in starting a production company? Because that's what comedy is. You got to know Photoshop.
Yeah.
You got to be able to
post
a podcast. You shoot your own videos. Put them on Instagram.
Yeah, but there's plenty of like new guys, even though I don't get to, I'm not like, you know, I don't watch as much comedy as I should. And I don't listen to even my tapes as much as I should. But there definitely are a lot of new people out there who are doing, I guess you could say, both the old school style of like jokes and like, you know, the room, and then like new stuff. Like, what's his name? Doug's buddy who opens for him, Junior. Like, I had him on that Comedy Underground show on Comedy Central, and I was like, man, he is so different and funny, and his stuff is dark, and like, it's so cool. It's cool to see. And like, the good thing about like, showcases is that like you get to see everybody for like 15
yeah. Nate Bargatze is fucking hilarious.
Nate is awesome.
Nate Bargatze and
let's Mark talk about Norman. Clean comedy for a while, because there's a guys out there who, like, you know, when people like beat up on the dirty, they go like,
sure,
you know, blah blah blah, why do you have to? I go, well, you know what, there's like 100 great clean comics out there. Why don't you go see them? Honestly, you should go see them. Like Nick Griffin is awesome.
Oh, he's fucking amazing.
Like I can name like all night just these people who are just great to see, who are just dead strong joke writers. And
Jonigan, he's an amazing
Tommy Jonigan.
There you go, Tommy Jonigan.
Yeah.
And then there's the new joke guys like Sam Morrell and Mark Norman just did a special. These guys, like, you look at them and you're like, wow, these guys are like, you know, I don't know if I can follow them. You know, they're doing that good.
Yeah, Mark Norman's special was really great.
Yeah, so that gives me like, I'm like, you know, it's cool. And whoever's watching this stuff, I guess, you know, let's hope that they'll come see us, because that's really what it is. You
sure.
Know?
Do you still cassette tape record this?
No, I wish I did that.
Bands around
I love that cassette recorder.
I remember that shit, man.
Is to throw it against the wall all the time.
And
I should go back to that now, I think, because that would creep out the crowd. I could talk about that for like 30 minutes.
You got 30 minutes on that easily.
It's a cassette recorder. Relax, everyone. No
he
one's going to die.
Do something that I don't know if you do this. Like when I did the like a weekend, Thursday through Saturday or Sunday, a different joke. Even when it was working, you'd try a different joke on the same setup, and I was like, what the fuck?
It's called self-destruction.
Oh, fuck, man.
You had...
It's called implosion.
You had a bit about killing a man with a hammer when I first started, and you must have... Every time I saw you, you worked it a different way. The hard thing about killing a man with a hammer is sneaking up behind him. Like, it was like you'd always had a different one, and I was like, yeah, any of those I would have just taken. That's my problem, yeah, with my stand-up is that I'm very lazy and that I don't do what Richard Jenny says where the bit's not done. I'm going to keep working at every angle.
Yeah, but, you know, don't you feel that, like, the audience themselves, like, they don't particularly want, like, a lot of bits. They just want to get to know you, and then they want to have a good time with you, right?
Now, it's so funny. I feel like when we worked in Miami, I remember it was insane, and I think it was a little unenjoyable for you because it was all Insomniac fans.
Yeah,
girls,
it's tough.
Were rushing the stage.
I
remember girls rushed the stage, and then,
you know, here's the beauty of it is that, like, the drinking crowd, which is all of our crowds, the drinking crowd is that, like, I consider my crowd now, like, they're almost too old to be that drunk, but they're still good drinkers, you know, whereas you guys have the full tilt.
Oh,
you know, like, these guys are, like, in their, you know, these people are, like,
well,
in their 20s,
they go out for, like, they're like, this is our blackout night for
yeah, but, you know, that's the thing of it is, like, you know, you have to kind of lead the parade, you know.
Well, I think I'm also a little more lowbrow than you, so I think I enjoy the
do you dye your beard?
No, I don't dye my beard. Perfect.
It is really pretty. It's a nice beard.
But I like, they send shots to stage. I remember when we were in Miami, you were getting a shot, and you saw me drinking. You go, "Are you drinking real tequila?" And I was like, "Yeah." "You're not?" And you're like, "No, I'm drinking coffee." And I went, oh,
"Yeah, no,
I
drank so many Jaeger shots that I usually would just like, I could almost feel my asshole going, you know, like blinking for help. Like, it was just too much.
Yes,
and like at the end of the day, like, you know, the drinking and all that kind of stuff, like, I miss smoking on stage more than ever drinking on stage. But it's weird how, you know, like, people see you on a TV show and then they come down and they want it to be just like that. And I'm like, you know, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to meet Spider-Man. But, like, even if I met him, I wouldn't expect him to, like, you know, swing around or anything like that, you know. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, like, dude, I feel for you in a way. But I guess, hey, you know, if you're into it, then that's awesome.
Well, I'm into it. But I don't – the other thing is I don't really drink on stage. I bring a Tito's and soda with me.
Yeah.
But I don't drink it. And if I'm doing –
version of I don't really do it.
Yeah.
I bring it on stage.
But I'm not hammered, like, on stage and it's a spectacle. Like, there were comics when I started whose bit were that they were drunk, but they weren't really drunk. Like,
like Foster Brooks.
No, I forget the one guy. I remember there was a guy from Boston who pretended to be drunk on stage.
Oh, the Boston guys are the whole other world of comedy. I mean, like, those guys, like, monster headliners, and, you know, they partied. They would make your party almost look like you're, you know, nothing. They were really, those guys, like, full tilt, coke and booze and just, like, nonstop, and you know, they. For a while there, I'd say like 10 good years, they really did like rule like New England. No one could follow them. No one could touch them.
And you guys would all go up there for your first time in Boston.
We get our ass beat.
Everyone, I remember hearing people share stories one time. I think it was Colin Quinn.
I have the same story. I mean, Nick's in Boston. I remember doing it there where it wasn't Colin's story, which is a great story, but my story was just like, you know, like, I really don't know how this is going to end. Like, I know I'm going to probably have to fight somebody. Like, that's like the best thing that could happen, that somebody's going to throw a punch at me.
Yeah.
But other than that, it was almost like, you see these town halls now?
Yeah.
It was kind of like that, but with jokes. People standing up, questioning, passionately screaming at you.
And would you do like 20-minute sets or longer, like when you did the book?
Well, I had a headline.
Oh, you were headlining those
Yeah,
shows.
But they loved throwing like New York guys a beating because they were so much better than us. Yeah. All of them. Nick DiPaolo, who's another guy, like, talk about like one of the best guys who, super funny, super dark, good looking guy. Like, he was what I considered like a headliner before any of us were headliners. And whenever I would watch him on stage and how, like, you know, all that Boston training of like just hardcore, like, you know, I am the comic and you people are going to like listen to it, whether you like it or not. That was like impressive to watch, you know, because he was like a real, real headliner, you know. So for a guy who was like, you know, the same group of people as me.
Can you tell immediately, like, if you're going to like a comic, like, so, like, I think when you're younger, it's very easy. You're like, oh, my God, this is a guy that I'm going to enjoy. Like, and Nick DiPaolo was one of those guys. He had a joke All these people say they've never said the N-word. Oh, apparently, they've never put a dime on a pro NBA game. I fucked his joke up, but it was an old one. But can you, like, were there guys that you saw and you're like, oh, this is going to be my new favorite comic?
I had a ton of favorites, but the people that I kind of looked up to would be like Colin Quinn, Alan Havey. These were the guys who were already doing it a long time, and they kind of showed me, like, just from watching them. Because I watched a lot of comedy, you know, at the back of the Comedy Cellar. It wasn't like it is now. It wasn't like this almost, like, international house of comedy where, like, people from Norway come there. And, like, you know, you know, thanks to Louis and a lot of the comics who work there, it's, like, a big deal, you know. And these tourists come in, they want to see these people, and they also you know, it made comedy like almost like rock star kind of status. But back then, half full, you would hang out at the end and they'd throw you on if there was still some audience. And that was like another thing that I think kind of branded me, which is the late night comic. And, you know, like you're at, on at the end, the audience is basically spent. And like, you know, all these years I was like, I'm a late night comic. And then I would hear that like Sam Kinison was. But I'm sure his late night comedy scene was way different. Like with Sam Kinison, we've all heard these stories where it's like the Comedy Store, you know, 2 a.m, you know, strippers, like just like people like circus, circus people. Yeah, like the entire, you know, whatever. They would like almost like the Rainbow Room would move down the Sunset Strip into the Comedy Store. And it'd be like this wild, almost like circus event. Like that wasn't how it was late night in New York, you know. But to this day, like I'm more like connected to like the guys who close, like you know, Jay Oakerson, who's a really good friend of mine. Like when I watch him close, it reminds me a lot of like, you know, back in the day where like, you know, you're the last guy and you have to like, you know, they've heard everything, they're exhausted, they're drunk, and now you have to do it. And I love how he does it, you know. He's great at it, he's a master. And that's kind of the comedy that that I'm glad I did it. But like in today's world of comedy, like it kind of seems like in the alt world, you know, I don't want to put down a scene or anything, but like everybody comes up there, they're like kind of low key, low energy. It's almost like it's always like the last spot of the night where it's like, did I get here too late? Was there like some kind of wild event? And it's like, everybody's like, just like really low key. Like it's almost like the calm down after a cycle class. Like, you know, okay, everybody just, we just like pedal. We're not really going to go crazy.
Do you ever get on those alt shows? Like,
I've done a few of them, but I have to say that like I have no desire or connection to that group. Like even back in the day when that started, the Largo and Fez group, I was always in the club world. But I see now that like they probably were doing the right thing, because a lot of them really went from like, they were able to take what they did and like people saw it and turned it into movies and TV shows and stuff like that. So, you know, I understand what they do and I understand what we do. And I think that we used to get a lot of, I guess you could say like blowback on it, where it's like, you know, you guys are just like hack club comics. At the end of the day, like, you know, you want someone to be strong, you know, because you know where you have to play. Like, I'm not sure if you can take an alt act and bring it out to, like, Omaha, Nebraska or Wichita, Kansas.
I don't think it goes, but, I mean, I feel like it's, I mean, I used to feel like when I did alt spots, what I would do is just try to look like I was just thinking about
the something else.
And I try to stammer through it. I'd be like, you know, like, I almost like I'm stuttering through the beginning of
it.
And then it would work because it felt more authentic in the moment. But I also felt like it was clear when club guys would do these, even if you felt like that guy's not of this tribe, that the audiences would still be like, this is good comedy. And that it wouldn't necessarily go the other way, that like the super alt, even though some of them definitely could play, not all of them could play in the club, you know?
Well, that's another thing, like when you talk about like towns like Chicago back in the day of the zanies, you know, like, and I'm sure you guys love Chicago. It's a great drinking town, great food, you know. The audiences there are pretty cool, but there always was that, like, you know, person in the crowd who's like, I'm an improv instructor, or like, you know, I run a, you know, some kind of theater somewhere. And you could always tell, like, that look of disdain for your, you know, midget and dick jokes, you know, and I was always like, you know, give me a break.
I think the one difference, I remember saying this and getting in trouble, I said a long time ago about an alt comic. But I said, well, I think I do comedy to make strangers laugh. I think they do comedy to make people they know laugh. And I go, I can definitely make people I know laugh, but that's the same as if a comic's playing to the back of the room.
Right.
It's like, I always tried to have a good set to the people that bought the tickets. But I also think that was New York. Like, I think that had...
I don't think New York is particularly... I think it's... I've had more fun on the road than I've had in New York in terms of political correctness.
Oh, yeah.
And that New York is a PC town.
Definitely.
You know, there's a lot of PC towns, and that when we talk about alt, just to go back, is that that's there's really no alt anymore. That is comedy. That is really what comedy is now. And that, you know, when you think about, like, all the, you know, trigger words and, you know, shaming and all that kind of stuff racism, all that stuff is kind of like... You know, like when I listen to my old tapes, talk about like the old tapes, it's like listening to a Hitler speech. I mean, and the crowd, like this feral, wild crowd just like cheering me on and laughing. And like I could throw that up on the History Channel and be like, you know, hate. Hate was alive, you know.
Yeah, but I felt it change so much.
It has changed.
Yeah, in 10 years it's been
And I'm going to say it too. It's going to say it's changed, but the audience has never been angrier and more opinionated and more entitled and more, you know, they come in there with their own agenda. And, you know, the fact that, like, they think they're whatchamacallit, they're expecting something they can click and like. Instead of just sitting there and like having a good time, it's annoying for the comic, and it holds comedy back. It definitely does. I second, triple, three times. I when you talk about like writing a joke again, in my head now I'm writing it like three times before I say it, because I'm like, okay, let's look at the crowd here. Okay, this guy's got cornrows. He's white. I better not say that.
Yeah.
And this guy over here, you know, whatever. I think he's got an EpiPen on him, so I better not talk about that. You know? So, you know, it's like. It's almost like, you know, like when you look at dice, like back in the day, you know, how like he would just come in here and just basically, you know, just fucking like boom, like a grenade, you know. I miss those times, but at the end of the day, I think there's better comics now.
Do you
know?
Want to do you still, because I obviously have been doing it far less than you.
But how long have you been doing it?
15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I feel the grind of it. And
absolutely.
Are you like, fucking A, man, like this...
I mean, like, these are like the good, you know, like the oasis in the desert where you get to hang with people and, like, you know, come to LA, you know, see people who moved out here. But I don't know what to tell you, man. I do think that, like, the road is its own, it's like its own world, and that eventually, you know, you want to get off the road right before people stop coming to see you. Otherwise, it's sad, you know? But definitely, you guys are young. You have so many different opportunities, and
no,
you know.
I mean, it's, I look. It's great. I'm not trying to.
I mean, I'm seeing you go into real estate.
Yeah, I love it.
House flip on the road would be good.
I
that's a really good question of the grind of the road. Of like, you know, people don't really see it as a grind, but it is. It really is.
Do you like doing?
Well, it's so different now. I mean, like, you guys don't have to get up for morning radio, do you? You have your own.
Depends. Yeah.
I still will. Yeah. Tom does less of that. But I still will, only because I was doing the road when morning radio was selling tickets.
And you're good on radio.
And so I knew a lot of those people. I've known them for now 15 years.
Yeah.
So like I go, well, if I'm going to Tampa, I'm definitely doing Cowhead. I'm doing...
And every morning radio show like used to be the way that you sold out the show. Like you do a day of radio and then you do the set and you'd be, you know, wasted the whole time or whatever, you know, coming off a hard drunk. And then you would do the radio. And nowadays it's almost like... The club doesn't even know what radio stations are in that town, you know?
No.
And you're like, okay. And I'm cool with that because who wants to get up for morning radio? But
or the good morning, you know, TV.
Yeah, TV.
Show.
Like, that was another thing that, like, I stopped doing that years ago because I was like, there's nothing I can say that I can say on this thing. And they always ask me the same dumb questions.
You also know that Attell fans are not watching.
Well, I have a heavy-duty soccer mom fan. The afternoon drive people. No, that's true. They. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But I was always thinking, like, it would be cool if, like, back in the day, we saw like The Who.
Yeah.
Like they had to do Good Morning Radio. You know, like, So you guys are what? Who are you guys? We're The Who.
Yeah. Radio. Now when I do radio, a lot of times they have booze in there waiting for me.
Really?
Which makes it a lot more.
It's easier.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, they know what's going on.
Couple cocktails, like, because Tito's has been very aggressive at reaching out and doing stuff for me.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's so
I
funny.
Tried to get sponsored by Jaeger a long time ago, and like the Jaeger people would come up to me, like the reps, and go like, "You should like do our, you know, Jaeger Fest and all kinds of." And then at the end of the day, they didn't want me to do it, and I was like, "That sucks, man," because I really felt like I was drinking like 30% of the Jaeger sales in the United States.
I mean, especially after that special too. That must have been crazy.
And now it's like I could. The whole idea of like that's like another thing in comedy where you have to have like this like business, whatever business plan to it. You know, that's something that I have trouble with, you know.
Yeah.
That's cool if you can get sponsored by
I just drink a lot of it. I drank it on Rogan's. I drank it to I lost 40 pounds drinking it.
Really?
So yeah, yeah. Yeah, shitting blood at an airport. Yesterday morning, I was very hungover with Stanhope,
yeah.
And he made me a smoothie. And then I don't feel good the whole ride to the airport. I feel like shit. We don't speak. He doesn't smoke. It's just drive to the airport to get on the fucking plane. Mm-hmm. We get through security. I go take a shit, and it is red. And I'm yeah. like, motherfucker. Yeah. And I go, please tell me there were beets in that smoothie. And Stanhope starts laughing. He goes, you just thought you were shitting blood? I was like, it's just a very long way, rough way to end the weekend. But yeah, there's...
When know, I was shitting blood... I remember I ate, like, a lot of McDonald's that day. And so, like, for the first 48 hours, I convinced myself that it was the chicken fingers.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not going to eat that again. That's horrible. It wasn't the fucking gallons of booze that I drank. I was doing a little hotel medicine, as they call it. It's like, let's see. I wonder what did I eat that was red? Mm. I think I had an apple 2 weeks ago. And that probably just came out now. But, dude, you know, the other cool thing about comedy that, like, I don't really take advantage of is that you can really travel the world doing it now. So yeah, no, I know it's cool. Hard with a family and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know,
we're
like.
We're both doing tours in Australia.
Yeah, I've never done that. Like, they've asked me a bunch of times.
Oh, that you should totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it sent me already to, like, crazy. I mean, I've done South Africa.
I've done South Africa.
UK. I mean, I've done Hong Kong, Singapore, Macau.
Yeah, like, you know, I always want to do those things, but I'm like, the flying now is like, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that I think on the road people don't understand of like, you know, I know like they have the pre-check and all that kind of stuff, but like, yeah. It's obnoxious to spend your whole day at an airport.
It's terrible.
Like, and then when you put that together of like, okay, I fly 30 times a year or 40 times a year, then you go like, and I've been doing this for, let's say I've been on the road 25 years. So you're like, okay, I've lost 2 years of my life to waiting to fly.
Right.
Not even the flying part, just like the waiting.
Do you like to now, though, just pare down your weekend? Just go like, I'm only going to do...
Yeah, that's a good question where I have buddies who still go out from Tuesday to Sunday and they're like, I never sell out. I'm like, exactly, because you're there fucking, you know, the whole week.
Yeah.
If you were there like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, maybe Sunday, then you might sell some of them out.
Yeah.
But the clubs too, like, you know, I think that there's definitely a love-hate relationship with comics in the clubs. I love the clubs, and I'll tell you why, because they're really up against it now, all these theater shows, plus all the web. And that's where you become a comic is on the road in a club. Yeah. And I always go like, you know, when I hear these clubs and I'm like, okay, so who's here? And it's always like some guy who was like, you know, famous. He was on a TV show and now he's doing comedy because he's waiting for a movie. And I'm like, well, that sucks. That fucking takes a week from another guy who's been like working his way up from the bottom. But what can they do? They got to sell tickets. They got to pay their rent, you know?
Yeah.
And back in the day, like you really didn't see much of that, you know? And, you know, I think it's only going to get worse, you know?
I think that how similar – I know you were at the tail end of the first comedy boom.
Yeah.
But how similar
at the end of it. Like they were folding up the tables and chairs, like right at the end. It was almost like that Wall Street.
When did you start? At what year?
Like 88. Like 88 is when I really started doing it.
And you?
I started when I was on my 26th birthday. That's when I said I lived in New York and I was going to clubs. Sitting in the back of the room, but on my 26th birthday, I got a job working the door, handing out that flyer, the Boston Comedy Club flyer.
Right.
It barking at the Boston.
Well, the Boston Comedy Club is no more, you know that, right?
Well, you know what they said? We were talking about doing a special, and they said, dream scenario. Just take money out of the idea. What would you do? I said, no questions asked. I'd go back to Houston, and I would rebuild the Laugh Stop inside
that club. Restaurant.
Yeah, that was great.
Yep. Mark was another guy who was always so cool to me, the manager of the club. And that club was great. That's where, like, I would play there. Hedberg would play there. Patrice would play there. And, like, that was, like, when you would play that club, you're like, this is a full-tilt, fun weekend all the way around. Same thing, like, Austin before it became too crunchy and, like, artistic. That was another, like, fucking great, you know, like, comedy scene, you know? But that Laugh Stop, that was a great club.
That was amazing.
I learned how to headline there, too. That was
my first headlining gig, and I asked, I forget who it was. I want to say it was Dane Cook, because I think he got sick, and he couldn't do the weekend, and he just said, write every single one, every joke you have to do an hour. You got to write. Because that guy, I started doing it when Pete was there. Pete Pirelli, right after Mark left, went over to the improv. And so I just wrote every single joke down and then did them all. And I had only done 35 minutes. And I was like, motherfucker.
That happened to me for years on the road where I was like, I hope I have enough time. I hope I have enough time. And then I would develop all these like little, like, I used to do that Amish having sex joke, you know, oh ye. Like, that would get really long. Like, I would make that like 15 minutes. I'd make it like 15 minutes because I was like, all right, how much more time do I need to do an hour here, you know? But I like those kind of like, you know, you know, it's like exciting. It's kind of like this weird excitement of like, you know, I'm gonna punch out right now. I got nothing left, and then like you'll come up with something just like out of the moment, you know.
Whose voice did you like? I feel like both of us will admittedly say that.
Whose voice did I steal?
Yeah.
I don't know
I used to say, but Patrice and I were in Scotland, and I had a joke because I had been cut off on the plane, and then when the waitress went to cut me off, I put my finger on her lips and went shh. And Patrice was like, that's a joke. And I was like, cool. And so I retold it on stage in Scotland. And everyone's like, you sound like a fucking lunatic. Because it sounded too real. And I sat in the back and I was like, I don't know how to do this. And Patrice's like, well, how do you think Attell would tell it? And I literally wrote it in your voice. You know what cops hate? When you touch their faces. But it never worked as well as had you told it. Because it was so out of place in my act. And but my whole bit was to get to the story. So... But whose voice did you replicate when you?
Well, you know, the sad part is that, like, because in New York at the time I started, there was only like maybe 10 really good people, and the rest of them were like guys who I think it was almost like guys who were like, because Seinfeld was like the, I guess you could say the pace car for everybody of like, I'm going to do my act and someone will discover me and I'll have a sitcom about nothing, you know, like everybody was thinking that, and there were definitely some people who were actor types, but. The real like comedy people that would move to New York and then kind of like would move out because it wasn't that great were like Bill Hicks was there for a few years. So I got to watch him work, you know, like a couple times. And I was like, damn it. I wish I had seen him like in another place for like longer because I'm like learning more watching him than I am watching anybody. But like, you know, the Richard Janney and those guys. And I'd say like voice wise is like Colin Quinn, like really had a huge effect on me. And like for a while there, I was like, oh shit, I'm sounding like him too now because I just like loved it. I loved him, you know, and that happens. But then eventually you have to get into your own world.
I think that was what The Road did for me.
Yeah.
Was you're not. There's no influence on you. It's just you doing you.
I had you tell me.
Mm-hmm. What?
I was in the green room and he's smoking a cigarette. And I was doing one of the same topics. I was like, hey, can I tell my fucking hurricane joke? And he's like, you can tell your joke, but you can't do my cadence. And I was like, oh, Jesus. And then one time.
You guys are really like the whatchamacallit, the girls who were stolen by Boko Haram. There's too much damage. You'll never be the same.
Schubert. I featured for Schubert once. Yeah.
He's another guy who, like, I love watching.
Oh, I love him. I love him. He's great.
And he's a road comic. Yeah. He is a road comic. Yeah.
He goes, as soon as I got off stage, he goes, you like Attell a lot? And I go, yeah. He goes, yeah, I could tell. It was touching the wall and shit, like Dave would do. And he's like,
well, make it sound like it's my fault I exist. But you know, I don't give a shit about that because people always come up to me and say that this guy sounds like this and that. But at this point, like, you know, if it really bothered me, I would have an opener that does the same 7 minutes and go like, okay, you do your 7 minutes, and then at the end of it, you close with that. I'll be at the merch table, and you say this like those guys. Like, I don't want that. I want power guys ahead of me and people doing it dirty and edgy. I want to be able to see if I can follow it. But at this point now, I know I can't follow everybody. I just know it. Like, I just can't. But I don't care because even though the crowd is there for me, like I've brought like Jay and all these guys on the road who are monsters. They're great. And like Kurt and all these guys is like, I love that they can blow a crowd away. I just love it. And I think that the audience appreciates it.
They do.
But I also know how it is to like be new in comedy. And like, unless you get in front of a real crowd, it's all in your head about like, hey, I think I'm doing everything right. And I've had like middles that go to me that go like, whoa, until this weekend, I really thought I was getting better. And now I realize that, like, you know, I got a lot of work to do. And that's true too, you know?
Totally.
And I feel that way every other show where it's like, man, I really like, I bagged out. I'm doing the crowd too much. The jokes that I'm using aren't written, you know, like blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the next week you're like, okay, let's hope some of those problems are better, you know?
Yeah. So that's my one problem I'm having with doing sets in the city is I see a lot of people at the store doing stuff that already works.
In LA, right?
In LA, yeah.
Yeah, because they're like in that audition mode all the time. And I see that in New York now, too, where people are afraid to take chances.
Yeah, like we did a show the other night, and some guy was like, I was like, is that new? And he was like, no, it's all old. It's from my first hour. And I'm like, why would you? I don't understand the purpose of that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm literally going up there trying to work on stuff. And I went, I think that's what comedy clubs in the city are for. There's only a handful. Like, Rogan's always working on new stuff.
Yeah.
Burr is.
Bill is like. No, nobody, nobody is stronger than that guy.
You and him are the two hardest I've laughed this entire year, and I'll say the last 5 years. That you and him both had me pissing myself, like tears coming down my face.
In bit,
yeah.
Bill got. I'd say 5 years better every time I would see him. Like I was like, wow, where did that come from? How did he learn how to do that?
It does feel like
so. He really like got in the fast lane of becoming great really quick.
Well, and, I think he stepped out of that. I mean, not to speak about Bill. You know, because we all know him, but I think he got out of that I want to be an actor audition comic place and moved back to New York and started hanging out at the Cellar more and focusing on stand-up.
Because
I think, you know, he was in that. He got discovered in a sitcom before like 5 months in.
Right. Well, whatever he's doing, like when we do the Patrice benefit, he has to close that out after like, you know, 10 people like pretty much doing like their best stuff in a theater. And like, you know, nobody's better at that. I mean, like, he gives them a full tilt show, and I like that. I like that he does that. Plus, he's got a huge heart to do that for what he does for Patrice's family. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all in the same boat in terms of, like, you know, my act. Like, I'm kind of at the end of it, so it's like my jokes are derivative on stuff that I've done years ago. So it's like, you know, another dick joke, another flying joke, another drinking joke. So, like, unless you know, I start either talking about politics or something like that, I really do feel that, like, see, when I was started, there were the political guys, like Louis Black, yeah. And, like, you know, there was a couple of guys who were, like, really good. Now everybody seems to have to throw in on it, but I'm all about throwing in on it as long as every joke I say is funny, but not just passionate, you know, like, you know, whatever.
Don't you feel like that every like, if you study, let's say, the all-time greats,
yeah,
Carlin, Pryor, talk about Rock, whatever, all these guys, they're all derivative of themselves at a certain point. They all have topics that fascinate them.
Right.
And they're revisited. The jokes are new, but the worlds they visit are not totally different. Like, you know, Carlin loved language, religion.
He definitely got more political,
political. But like Rock is going to do relationship stuff. He's going to do some race stuff. He's going to do some pop culture stuff.
Work with Chris, and nobody's better at it than him.
When
I saw him, because I see him at the Cellar working on material, and then when I got to work with him in Albany, and I got to see him do, you know, I couldn't stay for the whole show, but I got to see him do what he does when he puts it together. I was like, wow, this is really, you know, this is an event. This is worth every cent. And, you know, he doesn't tour like we all do. He tours every couple of years or whatever. Yeah. It's like, it's really cool to see when he, I guess, pulls out the whole, like, you know, the whole, like, basically the whole band shows up. So I would say that the derivative thing is maybe that's the wrong word for it, but it's true that we all kind of like have our themes.
Themes, right.
Yeah, yeah, you know. But at the end of the day, the crowd also wants to see that. Like with Gaffigan and food,
they,
you know, people,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, those are some monster food jokes. They're great jokes. And like when I would come up with a food joke and I would check with him and I was like, okay, yours is way better. You know, I'm not even going to try it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like the crowd, you know, like almost like, you know, they expect it.
Sure.
And you want to give them that, but you also want to, like, you know, I know Jim is a really good, good joke writer. So it's like he has plenty of stuff, you know? And what gets me about, like, when you do the showcases and stuff like that, like, you want to get laughs. Everybody doesn't want to bomb. But, like, there is an art to bombing, and there is also, like, stuff to be learned in the bomb, you know?
Yeah.
Oh. And I learned that years ago that, like, even though I'm bombing right now, I am learning something. Like, you know, I might lose this battle, but the next one I will be stronger. And I do think that you don't see that as much nowadays, you know?
Are you in spots in town?
In L.A.?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was at the store last night, and you know, the cool thing about, like, the store is that it's as close to New York comedy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam and Paige, who runs the improv, like, they really are hardcore comedy fans. So, you know, they want the comics to excel and for it to be a good hang and all that. But we still need the audience to come in. You know, that's really what it is. So people got to come down. They got to, like, you know, let it go. I think the audience is really the one now that has to catch up to comedy. I mean, they're all about, like, the famous names. But now it's like, let's get back to, like, you know, the showcase where you come down and you go, like, you know, this is going to be like when I go see bands, you know, like one's going to be cool. The other one's going to be like, you know, what the fuck was that? Yeah. And then the next guy's going to like close it out and it's going to be like a night of drinking and like, you know, a fun time.
Yeah.
And I don't see that anymore. I see everybody has their favorite comic.
Yeah.
And they go, I'm going to go see that guy. And because I know him, I know everything about comedy, and they don't.
Right.
There's a lot of different types of comedy.
That's true.
Yeah, it is kind of amazing that people would come in to see Burr, and then Joey Diaz would go up, and they'd be like, wait, who's this? And I go, wait, how do you know Bill Burr and not know Joey Diaz? Like, how do you, like, that's in my head. I go, someone said to me the other day, I think it was Bill, he goes, I think you forget how much comedy we watch. He's like, we're at comedy clubs every night. And he goes, a lot of these people go once a year.
Yeah.
No, well, I have fans who go to see a lot of different people, like, you know, Stanhope. Like, if they say Stanhope to me, then I know they're a comedy fan.
Yeah.
If they say, like, you know, my buddies like Artie Lang and these guys, like, then I know that they know, like, comedy. And it's funny because we're older and we have stories to tell, but the young stories are, like, so accessible to this generation of, like, you know, talking about like a computer problem or whatever their emotional problems are and like what they think is happening with them. But like the old stories, you know, the road drug, you know, roadhouse stories, those are the ones that are like, I'm like, yeah, this guy is a storyteller. But nowadays that's considered like, you know, who is this roustabout coming in here, like ruining our buzz?
Yeah. What's you got to get out of here?
Yeah, I do.
It's 3:30. So I think we should probably let you go.
I'm heading to, I'm heading to do more shows, and I hope to connect with your crowd on the road because you guys, always cool to me. And you know, I look at both of you. I'm very proud of how you know, you guys, just like, you're monsters. You're great, and you know, keep going out there and save your stories from my memorial. And at the Applebee's downtown.
What dates do you have coming up?
I don't really know. I don't know. You can go to davidshell.com.
I'll throw them up at the beginning of the podcast.
But what I was going to say is, next time you guys are in New York, come by the Cellar, you know, and let's all hang it out. You know, let's do it. And if I don't see you in town, I hope to see you there.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Well, hey, thanks for doing this, Dave.
I have one shout out to the I did this I Am Battle Comic movie, which is like the USO tours.
Yeah.
And Military Family Association, that's for the kids of military people who are deployed and overseas. It's a camp for them. So that's like one of the charities that I work with. So if you guys are, you know, usually the comedy crowd usually is super cool with the military because they're the best crowd.
Yeah.
Nonstop.
What's
and
the organization called?
The Military Family Association. And these guys, they really do take great care of these kids. So that's something else that the audience can think about.
Fuck yeah.
There you go.
Well, I think both of us can say that this has been a blast, man.
Thank you.
It's great hanging out with you, Dave.
I can't wait till your eulogy. It's going to be really special.
I can't wait.
Now, are you guys going to podcast as I leave, or are you going to end it?
We're going to end it.
Oh, that's classy. Yeah, yeah. I hate like when one guy leaves and then they go on for another hour and a half.
No. We're going to end it.
It's kind of like a bad date.
I will just say that, and Tom and I will say this to you, this is the last thing we're going to say, is that your stand-up, specifically Skanked for the Memories, is still shorthand dialogue in our house.
Really?
So like,
dude.
It's not even the jokes. It's your throwaways. Like, my wife still will say, did everyone get it that's going to get it? Let's move on.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said to Georgia when she was in bed, she's sick, I said, you know when mom says I want it to sound like a boot stuck in mud only wetter? And she goes, yeah, what is that? And I go, the guy that wrote that's coming over. And Georgia goes, there's a guy that wrote that? And I went, yeah.
We still don't say puppies. We say P-U-Uppies.
Yeah.
From watching you do a set. Yeah.
Some of these jokes should have really been ringtones. I think I would have made more money and been out of this game by now.
We still say Haiti where it rains AIDS. And,
all right, guys. Let's not ruin it for the Pandora fan base. No, thanks.
Yeah. No, I guess. Thank you, Ben.
Well, that's something that we could talk about. Is like when I started listening to comedy, it was albums, and it was like that. And that was cool, too, that you now with the special where you have to lock in everything.
Yeah.
But I remember like listening to specials, and I'd just be like laying on my bed, you know, like, oh, fucking having a great time. And now you got to kind of almost like lock in and like watch the whole. It's hard for the audience. It's hard to watch an hour.
I agree.
I think an hour is a lot of attention, and it's really difficult. And I give every one of them credit for doing it. But like when you drive and you're listening to those are the people Those are the stories where it's like, dude, I was listening to your stuff, man. I was deployed, or you know, my dad was sick, and like we both listened to you in the hospital. It's like you're like, oh wow, I'm making a little bit of a difference in this world, and that's because comedy is like such a audio thing. You know, it's like your world you create. Sure. But when you're doing the special, you know, it's a whole different thing.
We used to put Skanks for the Memories is in my car, and that's all I listen to, and I judge if I liked someone. And Leanne's dad got in, we just started dating, her dad came out. Her dad is a very simple dude, Baptist, and Skanks for the Memories was in. And you said, let's talk about Eskimos, or as I like to call them, snow Mexicans. And her dad was crying laughing, and I was like, okay, I might know this guy the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my other faith-based audience. The hardcore religious.
We'll get you out of here. Dude.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for doing that. Thanks, guys.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.